'Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
Hello, I'm Caroline Dowdswell, and I played the part of Janet King in the first series of Dad's Army. It was a very small part, and she was the bank cashier, a young teenage trainee cashier, alongside Ian Lavender. I got the part through my agent, of course, Bill McLean. And frankly, if you want to speak to anyone who knows more about Dad's Army than anyone else, you ought to speak to Bill McLean, because he had dozens and dozens of clients in the 80-odd episodes. And of course, he went to all the recordings and the bar mitzvahs, birthdays, weddings, funerals of all his clients there. And I went to very many of the recordings with him. But he knows all the ins and outs far more than I do. But anyway, I got it through him. And Bill had just become an agent, 1967, 68-ish. And he'd joined the Richard Jackson Agency as a personal manager. And he was given about a dozen, maybe more, clients to personally manage, one of whom was Arnold Ridley. And David Croft sent Bill a script to give to Arnold Ridley to see, A, if he was willing to do it, and B, to sound him out if he was fit enough to do it. Because, of course, Arnold was then 72, which isn't a great age, but he'd fought in the First World War and was badly wounded. And he had blackouts, he had a withered arm. He was a tough old bird, but obviously they were worried with insurance. Anyway, he sent him a script, and Bill saw the cast list in the script, and there was a part of a young cashier, and I think there was another part, a soldier, that a friend of mine, Neville Hughes, played. So Bill had three artists in that one first episode. So he sent me along for an audition with David Croft, who was, I felt he was a bit uninterested, really. He didn't really want any women in the series. He wanted to do a series with men only, and he was overruled by Michael Mills, the head of comedy. And I think eventually he did do a series of men only, didn't he? In It Ate Half Hot Mum, I think that was mainly men. But anyway, he offered me the part, and I was equally as underwhelmed because, I'd just seen a series starting on television called Mum's Boys with Irene Handel and Bernard Breslau that I hadn't liked. B, it was a very, very small part, just a cough and a spit in each episode. And in fact, my cough and a spit was cut out of episode 5 because we were overrunning. The whole scene was cut out. And C, the BBC paid so very badly in those days. Not like now. I think the equity minimum was 38 guineas. The BBC always paid in guineas. It was quite posh, not like ITV, who paid much more money, but in pounds. And I think he got me 40 guineas. He got me an upgrade because I'd only got the equity minimum doing small parts in things like Meet the Wife and Vendetta and Champion House. So I was a bit disgusted with the money. But it was 12 weeks' work, which you couldn't turn down in those days. You know, there's nothing else on the horizon. So I said yes. Wasn't that keen. Didn't realise that it would lead to a sort of... Well, I've made more money out of repeats from my 5 episodes than I have from anything else, I think. But anyway, off we went to rehearsals. Now, if you asked me what I had for lunch last week, I couldn't tell you. But I can tell you exactly what happened that first day of rehearsals. It's indelibly imprinted in my mind. We were at the Territorial Army Drill Hall in Acton. The BBC had got no decent rehearsal rooms. They'd built White City, you know, that big television centre at enormous cost. And it had state-of-the-art studios, scene docks, hundreds of offices, 4 restaurants, a bar, but they hadn't put any rehearsal rooms in. So we rehearsed all over the place. And this was in the Territorial Army Drill Hall in Acton. And it was very cold. It was spring. and there was a long trestle table in the middle, right down the centre, and dozens of people there. David Croft and Jimmy Perry at the top, with PAs and secretaries behind. People like makeup, head of makeup, scenery, set designer, lighting, gaffer, chief cameraman, all that sort of thing down one side. The actors in the middle. And David Croft introduced everyone to everybody else. He took charge, of course. And that was my first surprise. I was a bit nonplussed, because when I'd read the script, I'd imagined Pike to be a sort of weedy teenage Charles Hawtrey type of figure. And there was this rather good-looking, very confident, ebullient young man, straight out of RADA. He'd done one play. He'd done a play that David had seen him in. He was rather good in, apparently. But a lovely lad, not at all the sort of weedy little chap you expect. And the other shock was Clive Dunn, because I was expecting a Mr. Pastry type figure, little old grey-haired man, sort of bent double. And there was this, I think he was about 44 at the time, very suave, debonair chap. I remember it was the 60s, he was very Carnaby Street, sort of Mr. Fish shirts, and he had lovely suede jackets and a beetle haircut. He had dark brown, well, tawny brown, orange, not ginger, you know what to call it, chestnut brown hair in a sort of beetle cut. And not at all, the Jones the Butcher that you see on the screen. So that was a shock. But the biggest shock was John Le Mesurier and Arthur Lowe playing the wrong parts. Because when I was given the script, I don't know whether it said on the script on the front page, or if it was Arnold, when Arnold had gone up to see David Cross, but he went to Orchard months before me, whether he told us which way round the parts were cast. But he understood, and I did, that Arthur Lowe was playing Wilson and that John Le Mesurier was playing Mannering. So I was totally discombobulated when I was reading the part with who I thought was Wilson was John Le Mesurier, and of course it was Arthur Lowe, so I was totally thrown. So that was that. Now what else did you want to know? You wanted to know what it was like working with them. Oh, they were marvellous. But they hadn't, of course, gelled then. Later on, in about sort of third series, they were sort of one unit. And the authors, Perry and Croft, wrote for the actors playing the parts then. But the very first series, they'd written the characters, and the actors played the characters, and a lot of them didn't know the other people. I know John Le Mesurier and Clive Dunn were pals, but I don't think any of the others were. So everyone kept very much to themselves. For instance, John Laurie, I don't think I spoke to at all. he, apart from good morning, and he'd just say "I." He was tucked in the corner with his Times doing the crossword all the time. Arnold was lovely. I knew Arnold. I'd actually worked with him in Granada in, what was it called? The War of Darky Pilbeam, I think it's called. Didn't know him well. But he was sweet, he was a lovely chap, used to tell the naughtiest of stories, as did Clive Dunn. Clive Dunn was very entertaining, very friendly, very warm. They were very welcoming, but more reserved, if you know what I mean, much more reserved than they were later on. Now, who else? Oh, Ian, of course. He was my age, so we got on quite well. I used to collect him at Hammersmith Broadway in my little car, my little Mini, and take him to rehearsals. And Janet Davis, of course, was the only other woman, so I gravitated to her. But there was a 20-year age gap, so we hadn't really much in common. And also, because I had such a small part, I was usually let go at lunchtime, whilst they rehearsed all the territory, the, you know, drill hall scenes, the doing all their drilling and whatnot. I haven't really that much to do with them. Oh, yes, Jimmy Beck I did. I knew Jimmy Beck quite well, James Beck. I've been in York rep with him, and he came up for at least three plays. I was in the main rep, and he came up as a guest. He was an absolutely brilliant Shylock in The Merchant of Venice. He was a superb actor. He really was. He really was. So I chatted to him a lot, but it was they were quite subdued, I suppose, that first episode, first two or three episodes. And it wasn't until I got to know them much better. I used to go to the recordings with Bill in the third and fourth, fifth series, and go back afterwards to the bar and chat to them all. And I was invited to dinner with Arthur Lowe, with Bill. And I think Ian and his then wife or girlfriend, she was, Suzanne Kirchess. And he was a totally different character to that portrayed on the screen, of course. And I do remember vividly, he played what was either a harpsichord or a spinet after dinner and entertained us, which I was very impressed with. And we went to Clive Dunn's house. He lived in Barnes, just near me. They threw quite a few parties, actually. I must have gone there two or three times. And, of course, Arnold. Bill looked after Arnold wonderfully. He really did personally manage him, and so we were always up there with him and his wife, Althea. What else would I tell you about that? I think you asked if I had a favourite scene. Well, no, not really in mine. I can't even remember the bit that was cut out in episode 5. And I didn't actually watch my black and white ones because they didn't show them that often until about the 80s. But I did have a favourite episode, and that involved Arnold Ridley. It was called Branded, I think, yes. And it was where he was a conscientious objector, it was disclosed he was a conscientious objector. And Mannering was apoplectic and told everyone they had to ostracise him, you know, he was a coward, gave him white feathers and all that sort of thing. And then there's a fire somewhere, and dear old Arnold went and rescued Mannering, or Private Godfrey rather rescued Mannering, and got smoke inhalation. So they all went to visit him in his bed at home, and there on the mantelpiece there was a military medal. I think that was right. He'd won it as a medical order for bravery in the First World War. And that was a lovely episode. I cried, I sobbed my heart out over that. I really did. I really did like that. What else did you ask me? Any more memories? I think my main abiding memory of that first six episodes was Jimmy Perry. He was just so encouraging. I've never forgotten it. He'd, in the rehearsal room, you have all the scenes marked out, and you know the scenery, and you do your little scene, and he'd dance around beaming, mouthing the words with you and laughing every time, laughing at every joke, and then dancing over to the next scene as the next scene happened, and all agog, you know, he had lovely big blue eyes, and he'd laugh and uproariously. Whereas David Croft was very dour, non-committal really. You never knew if you were pleasing him or not. And when I sort of asked, I think it was Harold Snowd, and said, "Do you think he thinks I'm doing it right?" He said, "Well, you soon know if you won't." So that was about it. Whereas Jimmy Perry would laugh uproariously and look enthusiastic. He was brilliant. He was lovely. Very, very elegant man. I mean, whereas Clive was Carnaby Street, Jimmy Perry was sort of smart, casual German Street, very elegantly dressed. Beautifully turned out, and a great asset. He always had a crowd round him in the bar, entertaining. I remember once someone asking him what he based the characters on, and he said it was Will Hay. Well, I'd never heard of Will Hay. I was only young then, and apparently he did. Oh, he was the highest grossing film star in the 30s, and he had a format of an incompetent authority figure, like a school teacher or a station master. And his sidekicks were a bumbling old man and a sort of fat, idiotic schoolboy. And I didn't think that sounded very funny, but anyway, years and years later, when we got Amazon and Google, I was thinking about this. I think it was about 3 years ago when I had to do a programme for Gold TV on Dad's Army. And I Googled up Will Hay and I saw, oh God, what's it called? Mr. Porter. That was it. And there was, good God, he was absolutely right, you know, this incompetent authority figure and an old man that looked like Clive Dunn and this schoolboy who was acting like Pike. And that's where he said he got his inspiration from, because it was a winning format. Everybody likes to see authority figures pull down a peg or two and be exposed when they're incompetent. And everyone likes to see the underdog win. So I was quite pleased at finding that out at last. What else can I tell you? I mean, I've enjoyed watching them over the years, but I tend to miss them. We don't watch television much. I see more the coloured ones. I've only seen mine. I think I bought the DVDs about 8 years ago, and I showed them to my husband. So I can't really remember what I did apart from the odd line here and there and dropping a tray. So I can't really tell you anything more. Can you think of anything?
As you briefly mentioned about Ian Lavender and John Lee Majore and Arthur Lowe, how was the filming like when you was filming with them three in the bank scene?
Filming with who?
Filming in the bank scene.
Do you mean when we actually filmed it?
Yeah.
Nobody laughed. Should I start again?
Okay.
You ask about filming the bank scenes. I was a bit... I think it was the very first scene, I'm not sure. I know I was very nervous, and Bill Pertwee had done a brilliant warm-up. Everyone was falling back laughing, the audience. Of course, it was done in front of an audience. And we did our scene that Jimmy Perry had been falling back laughing at, but nobody laughed in the audience. And it was a bit unnerving, actually. And in fact, we heard later that I found out years later that the audience reaction was so bad for that first series. That's why they cancelled me in the second series, because they cut the budget and went down to cut the big studio, cut the bank scene out, and just use the Territorial Army set in a very small studio. But the only people I actually did interact with were Ian Lavender, John Le Mesurier, and Arthur Lowe, because I was only in the bank. I mean, I don't think I ever spoke to Frank Williams or Edward Sinclair. I don't think I ever saw them. They probably arrived for it. Well, I must have seen them, but I don't think I ever spoke to them. Well, I can't remember. But of course, it's 50 years ago. Arthur Lowe had a wonderful time, at least I thought he had. Years later, I read that he was struggling for lines. He couldn't. But at the time, I thought he had brilliant timing. And so did John Le Mesurier. Wonderful reactions between the two of them. And of course, Ian Lavender was superb. I mean, there was me thinking he's far too good looking and personable to play Pike. Oh, he was absolutely superb. Showed, you know, his acting skill. He really was. He's Pike. With his, I think it was an Aston Villa scarf, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's so long ago. But I do remember that first day. It was quite, you know, it was such a a shock that people playing the wrong parts, and I just thought, oh dear. Yes, who'd have thought that it had been at last 50 years? It's amazing, isn't it?
So, I know you appeared in 6 episodes at the start of Dad's Army, but was you ever invited to appear in other episodes of Dad's Army or other Croft and Perry sitcoms?
I did the first 6 episodes, and as I say, I was dropped from the release. They only had an availability check. I think I had a provisional booking for the second series, which was dropped. And I wasn't asked to appear in any of the others, but I was asked to appear in the film, but I couldn't do it because I didn't want to. It's only a 1 day, I think. I think Bill turned it down without asking me, because by then I'd been, straight after Dad's Army, I was Thora Heard's daughter in a couple of series of Ours is a Nice House, and my television career took off. I was, working pretty much non-stop for a bit, and for ITV, that was London Weekend, 3 times the money, much better. But as I say, I used to go back and see them, and I watched quite a few of the episodes being shot. Work with them later? No, I don't think I did. I don't think I did work again with them. I saw them a lot. I worked with David Croft's daughter, Penny Croft. I did a play at the we rehearsed at the Savoy. We were supposed to be opening at the Savoy, I think. But no.
Okay. On the episodes that you was in, even when it is shown on TV, do you still get royalties?
Oh, yes. When I got paid originally 40 guineas per episode. My rent at the time was £48 a month. So that was brilliant. It paid my rent sort of more or less for 6 months. And I didn't get any royalties. You got repeat fees when it was shown on BBC Two. And that's when the series really took off. The first 2 series were more or less flopped. And they found the audience reaction. It was not too soon after the war, but they were confused whether they're supposed to be worried and frightened by that. Do you remember in the first series, they had air raid sirens and bombs dropping and pictures of bombers and whatnot. And so I don't think people realised it was a comedy to start with. But by the time it got repeated on BBC Two, I think in those days you got half your fee again. So I'd have got 20 guineas for the repeat series. And because they put it on at tea time, it took off and the viewing figures shot up. That's when they commissioned the third series. But they didn't start repeating them all again and again and again till about the 80s, I don't think. I got sort of overseas sales for things like Bechuanaland and Finland, and you got 2 and fourpence. But it wasn't really until the DVDs and the CDs, what are they called, the tape things, those tapes, they started making those. Then suddenly the money came rolling in. And it was very nice. I mean, not a lot, because I only did 5 episodes and I was the least paid. But it's very nice, thank you very much, and still get a couple of thousand a year from it. So it's not to be sneezed at. In fact, far more than I earned at the time. Good old equity, negotiating actors to get repeat fees. If you think only-